Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 95 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Wolf's Guide to Wacky Northwest Weather, about my conversation with Jeremy Wolf, meteorologist with the National Weather Service. This is my third time visiting with Wolf at the National Weather Service office off Rambo Road west of Spokane, not far from the Fairchild Air Force Base. You can listen to our earlier discussions in episodes 25 and 39. Wolf is not a long-range weather forecaster, and that's fine with him, because he doesn't put much faith in their predictions. As he said in a previous episode, accurate predictions are good for about a week and no more. He does, however, believe there are certain weather takeaways from the meteorological conditions we know as El Niño and La Niña. In general terms, El Niño is when there is a warm body of water off the coast of South America, and La Niña is when there is a cool body of water off the coast. In theory, both create different weather conditions in the Pacific Northwest, except when they don't. I was eager to talk to Wolf again because of the ideal weather conditions that most eastern Washington farmers experienced during last season's crop year, that is, the 2017-2018 season. For those who may not be familiar with a crop year, it begins September 1st and continues to August 31st, versus a calendar year that runs from January through December. Ahead, you'll hear Wolf and I talk in these two-year farming increments. It can get a little confusing, so pay attention. I did an earlier podcast, episode 90, in which personnel at Country Elevator Operations described the 2017-18 season as ideal, hence the title of that podcast, An Ideal Season for Our Favorite Crop. My initial goal in driving to the Weather Service office for the third time was to ask Wolf what the weather conditions were that made the season so ideal. For the record, the 2017-18 season took place during a La Niña year, that is, the cool body of water off the coast of South America. Without a doubt, it was a good year, with the average per acre winter wheat yield coming in at 76 bushels. But 2 years ago, that is, the 2015-16 crop year, it was an El Niño year, and farmers actually broke the winter wheat yield record with an average per acre yield across the state of 78 bushels. Yes, I know the 2015-16 crop year ought to come with an asterisk, like the baseball players who hit all those home runs on steroids, because of the widespread falling number debacle. But that aside, my point is that the El Niño year of 2015-16 and the La Niña year of 2017-18 yielded crops that were very similar. Huh? Well, that's the wacky part of weather. There's opportunity for a lot of variation within what we refer to as an El Niño year and a La Niña year. There is also variation about El Niños themselves. As you'll hear ahead, there are weak El Niños, moderate El Niños, and strong El Niños. Some may even be classified as very strong. The 2018-19 crop season, that is the season that started September 1, 2018, and which will continue until August 31, 2019, is shaping up as a weak El Niño with a Pacific Decadal Oscillation, shortened to PDO, in a warm phase. Not to alarm listeners unduly, because variation is the hallmark of weather, but the worst drought in modern history in eastern Washington occurred in calendar year 1976, when there was also a weak El Niño with the PDO in the warm phase. But yes, we've had other seasons with the same pattern since 1976 that were not nearly as devastating. I'm just pointing out the possibilities. I begin by asking Wolf about last year's La Niña season, that is, the 2017-18 crop year, and what made it so ideal, before moving on to ask him to contrast it with the 2015-16 strong El Niño crop season. Be advised, the 2016-17 crop season is not part of this podcast discussion.
Well, we had a weak La Niña last year, and The storm track was aimed at Washington, Idaho, and Montana. It was drier to our south over Oregon and California. And sometimes with La Nina, we're more prone to cold air outbreaks, but we didn't see any real frigid cold air masses come in last winter. The coldest the temperatures got in the Columbia Basin was a single digits above zero. Now, that's not unusual because Ritzville recently has not dropped below zero during five of the past seven winters. Although if you compare it to the year before, last year, Ritzville dropped below zero 8 times. So I think that was helpful, not having any really cold air masses in the winter. Also, we had a wet spring. Now, this was not a surprise because our springs have been trending wetter recently. And then as we went into the summer, the conditions got dry. High pressure settled in, and for this summer, Ephrata only had a trace of rain, which was the driest summer on record. Grand Coulee also had the driest with 9 hundredths. Ritzville had the second driest, that's 12 hundredths. And Spokane had the third driest with 25 hundredths. So it was a very dry summer, and this is also becoming more common.
Interesting. Can you compare and contrast the weather conditions during the 2015-2016 crop season and the conditions in the 2017-2018 crop season?
15-16 season was a strong El Nino. Last year for the 17-18 season, we were in a weak La Nina. Both seasons brought wetter than normal conditions in the fall and winter. And in both seasons, the low temperature didn't drop below zero, like I said before. So really, there weren't any big differences weather-wise for those 2 years. Both of them were wet, wetter than normal.
But that's so fascinating that one was a weak La Nina this past season and one was a strong El Nino. We want to draw inferences from El Nino or not El Nino, but it doesn't seem like you can.
Well, not all El Ninos are the same. That 15-16 El Nino was unusual in that instead of California getting hit by all the storms, the storm track was shifted north. So we had a really wet El Nino year that year, similar to the wet La Nina that we had last year.
And yet we think of El Nino as throwing drought commonly, don't we?
A lot of times we have El Nino years that are drier than normal with the storm track shifted south, but there have been other El Ninos in the past that have given us normal or even a wetter than normal conditions.
Okay, we're going into the winter season, and forecasters are telling us that it's going to be a weak El Nino, correct?
Yes.
Okay. How much confidence do they put on that forecast of a weak El Nino?
Well, right now, the Climate Prediction Center, who is the official source of predicting El Nino, is calling for a 65 to 70% chance of El Nino conditions developing this winter. Right now, they're leaning towards a weak event. When it comes to predicting El Nino, they're just monitoring the conditions in the central and eastern equatorial Pacific and monitoring the ocean temperature. So there are some climate models that predict out into the future what those ocean temperatures are going to do. So they rely on a lot of what that model output is showing.
I've got to admit, it seems difficult to make very strong correlations looking at the ocean temperature regimens in the Pacific and wheat yields in eastern Washington. What do you think?
Well, that's a good question. I'm sure many folks have a hard time buying that ocean temperatures along the central and eastern equatorial Pacific could actually impact our weather in eastern Washington. But the truth is, ocean temperatures in that region impact thunderstorm activity along the equator. And those thunderstorms that develop send out pulses of energy that propagate into the mid-latitudes, which then impacts the location and placement of the jet stream. So yes, I believe there is a correlation. However, there are other factors that affect our weather besides just those ocean temperatures. So this is only one piece of the puzzle.
There are either three or four, depending on the sources, in terms of the strength of El Nino. Weak, moderate, strong, and some say very strong. How is the determination made regarding those three or four rankings?
Okay, well, they look at the ocean temperatures compared to normal in that central and eastern equatorial Pacific region, you know, off the coast of South America along the equator. And if the water is between 0.5 and 0.9 degrees Celsius above normal, then they consider that a weak El Nino. If it's between 1 and 1.4, that's considered a moderate. A strong El Nino is 1.5 degrees above normal or more. And some people also correlate a strong El Nino or a super El Nino, super strong El Nino with 2.0 Celsius or warmer. And when you have a strong El Nino, that means you're going to have even more warm water for the thunderstorms to work off of. So that creates a more unstable atmosphere and stronger thunderstorm activity, which can put even more moisture into the atmosphere.
So that 2015-2016 El Nino, which was, I assume, very strong, that sent up a lot of moisture into this region, so that was 2 degrees warmer than normal?
It was more than two. It was, I believe it got close to 2.5.
For most farmers, El Nino is synonymous with a lack of precipitation. In fact, two back-to-back El Ninos in 1976-77 precipitated the worst drought in eastern Washington in modern memory. For context, let me share that in Ritzville, which averages 12 inches of moisture annually, only 6.4 inches of precipitation fell in 1976, and in 1977, only 9.9 inches fell. I believe both years were weak El Ninos. What made those 1976-77 weak El Ninos so harsh?
The 76-77 weak El Nino, it was very anomalous. It wasn't the typical pattern where the jet stream was bringing in storms into the West Coast. We had a very anomalous ridge of high pressure that dominated the entire West. It wasn't just Washington that was dry. It was the entire West, and much of even the central part of the country was very dry. That was very anomalous. As far as the winter after that, the 77-78, that one, it started off dry, like the previous one, but then towards the latter half of the winter, storms did start moving into the West Coast, and we had near normal precipitation in January and February. So that was a more typical El Nino. Really comparing those two really shows that each weak El Nino can be quite different.
As we spoke earlier, the 2015-2016 very strong El Nino was not bad for precipitation as those two in 1976-77. There's lots of variation in El Ninos, but generally we have lower yields during El Ninos. What makes for the variation?
Well, I'm not an expert with every factor that influences the wheat yields, but with each El Nino, the weather that results varies. The 2004-05 El Nino was drier than normal, and we had a very dry February that year. The 2006-07 and the 2014-15, both of those brought pretty close to normal precipitation. Just the two things that stuck out during those recent two weak El Ninos was an early season cold spell that struck the region. In 2006-07, Odessa got down to 6 degrees on Halloween. And in 2014-15, from in November 11th through the 8th, the lows were between 11 and 19 in Spokane, and single digits were observed in the Columbia Basin. So those were both early on. There was no snow on the ground.
Does the El Nino actually influence the jet stream?
Yes. Yeah, the El Ninos impact the location and the strength and the of the jet stream.
Okay, so we're going to have a weak El Nino this year. The prediction is. Does that mean that the jet stream will not be impacted as severely as it would be in a very strong El Nino year?
That is correct. Typically, during moderate to, and especially strong El Niños, you're more likely to have the typical El Nino pattern set up. Whereas with a weak event, there could be more variability of what occurs.
The whole El Niño-La Niña discussion tends to simplify things, which is good when you're dealing with folks like me who don't know a lot about atmospheric conditions. But really, discussion about El Niño has been supplanted by other things, other terms like the Pacific Decal Oscillation, and whether it's in a warm phase or a cool phase. Can you explain what the PDO is and how it changes and whether it's in a warm or cool phase now?
The Pacific Decadal Oscillation has to do with sea surface temperature anomalies once again, but instead of looking at the central and eastern equatorial Pacific like El Niño and La Niña, we're looking at the anomalies in the northern Pacific Ocean. When the anomalies are cool in the interior North Pacific and warm along the Pacific coast, the PDO has a positive value, and then just the opposite for a negative value. You'll have warmer water in the interior North Pacific and cool anomalies along the coast. So the phase of the PDO can last up to 30 years. Now, the phase of the PDO, whether it's in a warm or a cool phase, the impacts of El Niño and La Niña can be influenced by that phase. So when they're in alignment, say if we're in a warm phase of the PDO with an El Niño going on at the same time, there's a better chance of El Niño impacts the typical pattern occurring. Whereas if they're opposing each other, then, you know, it's a lot less confidence of what will happen with an El Niño event.
Okay, so a positive or warm phase is correlated with increased precipitation in the Pacific Northwest. Is that correct?
During the positive phase, the Aleutian Low strengthens and winter precipitation increases in the southwestern United States. That was from a research paper I've read. For the Columbia Basin, a slight increase shows up in precipitation, possibly due to less rain shadowing off the Cascades, as the rest of the Northwest shows an actual decrease in precipitation as storms are aimed more at California.
So what are we in now? Positive, negative, warm or cold?
Right now it's close to zero. So it's not really into the positive or negative phase. So based on that information, I don't see any strong indications that the PDO will either enhance or not enhance the El Niño. Recently, it's been in a warm phase for the past few years, but within those long periods, 20, 30-year periods, it's not uncommon to have some variability where even if you're in a 20 to 30-year period of, say, a cool phase, you can have some years embedded within there that are actually briefly going into the warm phase of things.
So I'm curious, do they have records going back to 1976, 77, that very bad drought that we had for the Pacific Decadal? How do you pronounce that again?
Decadal.
Pacific Decadal Oscillation. Do you know what phase that particular weak El Niño was?
We were in the positive phase that year.
The warm phase.
Mm-hmm. The warm phase during the fall, winter of 76, 77.
And we're in the warm phase now.
It has been warm, but the most recent value is closer to zero.
Okay.
For the August value. The September value should be in very soon, but the August value was near zero for the PDO.
Okay, let's shift gears a little bit here. El Niño is generally associated with drought, at least in the minds of farmers and myself. But it's absolutely correlated with higher than average temperatures, correct?
Well, regarding temperatures, usually El Niño years are warmer than normal, but not always. The 79-80 El Niño brought rounds of cold weather in January and February, with some days as much as 15 to 20 degrees colder than normal. So while El Niños tend to be mild, it's not uncommon to have at least a week or two of much colder weather during El Niño. And also, For that winter, the Columbia Basin finished colder than normal, but much of Oregon, Idaho, and western Washington was at or warmer than normal. So that tells me that the Columbia Basin itself can be a unique climate. It's in a bowl shape with a lot of higher terrain surrounding the Columbia Basin. So when cold air gets in here, it can be hard to displace, and we need some good wind to mix it out.
Okay. So there's another term that I'm not familiar with that's associated with the Pacific weather phenomenon, and it's called the Madden-Julian Oscillation. I've never heard of it. The MJO. What is it? Sounds like football, Madden.
Yeah, well, the Madden-Julian Oscillation, it's an eastward moving disturbance in the tropics of clouds, rainfall, winds, and pressure. And this wave, it traverses the planet and returns to its initial starting point in 30 to 60 days on average. So it's a wave that can temporarily disrupt the jet stream and what the common winter theme is. So it could be an MJO event that would bring you a week or two of colder weather during an El Nino year. You know, something that the winter as a whole could be mild, but you could have a period in there where the MJO temporarily changes the location and strength of the jet stream.
Are there other phenomena that I don't know about? I mean, I just learned about the MJO.
There's also the Arctic Oscillation that has to do with pressure anomalies in the Arctic, and depending on whether we're in a positive or negative phase of the Arctic Oscillation, that can have implications as to our potential for seeing colder air outbreaks in the winter.
We're very concerned about Arctic outbreaks because of winter kill. And, you know, we used to have winter kill on average about every 7 years. And there hasn't been winter kill in forever. I mean, I'm talking widespread winter kill. What's happened to these Arctic outbreaks?
Well, with the Arctic regions getting warmer under climate change, we're not seeing as cold of air masses that can come down into our region. And record low temperatures are very unusual. It's very hard for us to break record low temperatures, and that's because with the warming climate, it's hard to achieve temperatures that were occurring back in the 1950s, 1960s. But we can look at the phase of the Arctic Oscillation to at least get the idea of what cold air there is out there in Canada and in the Arctic regions, and what the potential is for that to come down our way. But again, that is also not predictable more than a week or two out. So really, El Nino and La Nina is our best tool for forecasting for the whole winter season as a whole.
As Wolf said, El Ninos and La Ninas are the best we have for forecasting a season's worth of weather. But at the same time, you heard him say there is a lot of variation within both weather phenomena. I'll be thinking about this podcast throughout the rest of the growing season, and I hope you do too. Will the upcoming weak El Nino slam precipitation like it did back in the 1976-77 crop year? Or has climate change, along with natural variation, reordered the equation? Let's meet back here next August to discuss. Until then, I hope you enjoyed Wolf's Guide to Wacky Northwest Weather. Please join me again next week for another Washington Grain Commission-sponsored episode of Weed All About It.
We love the land. The farm's our career. But make no mistake, we do not steer. Mother Nature's in the driver's seat. I'm talking life, and I'm talking wheat. We're riding shotgun and we have our say, but Mrs. N, she points the way. We feed you.